everyone, and welcome to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor, and I'm here along with my co-host, Chris Weigel, where every weekend we're here, we're doing life together, and as always, we're so glad you joined us.
That's right, Dr. Linda. Great to be on the show with you again this weekend. I know that you are a baseball fan, especially when it comes to the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, I'm really not a big baseball fan if it's not the Cubs.
Right.
I've waited a long time to see a victory.
You and lots of other Cubs
fans.
Yeah,
I know, but it was great last year. And we have the W flag flying in the mental, well, in one of the offices. I'm not sure. It's not with me. It's with my husband.
That's right. Well, speaking of baseball, recently you had the chance to at a conference, to speak with Daryl Strawberry. And we remember him as a force to be reckoned with Major League Baseball for several years. He began his career in 1983 with the New York Mets, and then he became an eight-time All-Star who hit 335 career home runs with the Mets, Dodgers, Giants, and the Yankees. And for 17 years, he gave us many memorable moments in baseball. He played on four World Series championship teams, one with the Mets and three with the Yankees, and he's been called one of the most electrifying players in baseball.
Do you remember him?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I remember my dad talking about him because they played the Yankees, played the Tigers all the time. My dad's a Tigers fan. But here's the thing. Behind the uniform was a very broken man whose career and his life was ravaged by childhood abuse, by anxiety, by drugs, and alcohol addiction. And so Daryl will tell you he wasn't well on the inside of his life, and his addiction led him to spiral downhill in every area of his life. At one point, Chris, he was $3 million in debt as well.
Wow.
That's a lot of money to be in debt. To spend all of that money that he had and to be that far in debt was pretty significant. But today, here's the good news. He's a very humble man who has been clean, I believe, for 12 years. And he loves the Lord. He makes no bones about that. And he's made it a mission in his life now to help those who are struggling with addiction.
His new book, Don't Give Up on Me, Shedding Light on Addiction, is hitting shelves online and in stores right now. And today we want to shed light on addiction. It's a serious problem in our country. And those listening who are either caught up in addiction or have family and friends in addiction, today we would like to offer some help.
Yeah, it's really important to know that an addiction crisis has hit our nation. There is a national epidemic of addiction sweeping the country. A lot of people have heard people talking about the opioid crisis. This is part of that addiction problem that we're seeing in so many places in our country, places we never used to see drug addiction. I think that's what's a little frightening about all this. So we need to wake up, especially the church, to the reality that many of our neighbors, maybe our friends, maybe even the person sitting next to you at church on Sunday is caught up in this very destructive cycle of drug abuse.
In the 60s, it was marijuana and LSD. Mm-hmm. How is this different from that?
I think what we're seeing now is the opioid crisis. And we might do a show on this at some point. We can talk about what happened with prescribing of narcotics years ago, where doctors were encouraged to do that. Now we've seen an overprescription of that, and we're seeing that now carried out into people's lives. In fact, then a lot of people who started on prescription drugs are going to heroin because they can get it cheap on the streets.
Wow. There are millions of people dealing with addiction, and we've heard a lot in the news about police officers giving Narcan injections to save these people's lives. Give us a glimpse of what a first responder is dealing with in these neighborhoods.
So here's a typical story. A first responder, who could be a police officer, a firefighter, somebody who's called to the scene, right?
Right.
With somebody who they believe has overdosed. They arrive at the house, and it could be in a quiet suburban neighborhood. And as the person enters the door, the young man in front of her appears to be almost dead. So what they see is they see his lips are blue. He isn't breathing. His eyes are half open and still. His arms are limp, and a young man or woman might be crying uncontrollably in the doorway. The young man has a faint pulse, and in seconds, the officer takes a syringe and plunges it into his thigh. He gasps, he coughs, he flails, he screams, he kicks, and he acts wild. But he is alive thanks to that dose of Narcan that resurrected his body.
What physically happens in the body?
So a lot of times with these overdoses, the respiratory system really begins to shut down and the whole body shuts down. Mm-hmm. And that Narcan drug just awakens everything very quickly.
From what we are reading and seeing on the news, first responders are finding themselves overwhelmed with the number of overdoses they are encountering on a daily basis. Those Narcan injections reverse the effects of heroin, like we just said, and they do save lives. Dr. Linda, in my home state, West Virginia, it's one of the leading states for opioid and heroin addiction.
So did you know that before?
I'd heard it, yes. And from people I see on Facebook, you know, I still have lots of contacts.
Friends in that area.
Right, from people back home. Yeah, it's a serious problem.
Do you see messages on Facebook of people saying we know somebody or we saw somebody who overdosed?
At least once every 3 to 4 weeks someone
wow.
has overdosed on drugs, yes.
Well, places like West Virginia, the city Huntington, it's a fairly large city in
40,
West Virginia.
40,000 people.
Oh, that's not that big. Okay. Yeah. Well, they currently have the highest drug overdose death rate in the state, and it's number one in the nation, Chris. It's just terrible for overdose deaths. That is affecting people in that state and in that city, young and old. It's not just young people. Mm-hmm. Somebody was telling me at the conference that there was a grandmother in one of these cities who was actually dealing in prescription drugs.
Unbelievable.
A grandmother.
Their overdose rate is nearly 10 times higher than the national rate.
Well, in fact, there was a police report that indicated that one day in August last year, there were 26 overdoses in just a few hours in that one city alone.
Wow.
So no wonder you're seeing people put this on Facebook. Mm-hmm. This is real, and we need to wake up people to what's going on here.
It's frightening to think that everyday people in West Virginia are dying from drug addiction.
So what is striking about this is when they went out and they started talking to people and saying, what is going on? I mean, asking that very question that you're asking, people talked about a feeling of hopelessness in the town. Unemployment was an issue. People were asking, you know, what is my life about? What is my life worth? What kind of purpose do I have in my life? And they cited a lot of real reasons of, I just want to feel better. I just want to escape. And I don't want to feel the stress of real life. I don't want to deal with the pain that's inside of me. And drugs, unfortunately, instead of religion, seem to be the choice of just way too many people. So feeling better means escaping from real life. And boy, we need to change that for people.
That's right. It's not just West Virginia. It's all over the nation. And the stories are different for different people. Tell us about Savannah, for example.
So this is a story that will just break your heart. So Savannah was 10 years old when her drug use began.
10 years old.
10 years
That's
old.
What, fourth grade, fifth grade?
Yeah. So both of her parents were active addicts. Her mom gave her pills for the first time. And what Savannah would do is she'd take a bunch of pills every day. She'd smoke marijuana. She'd drink alcohol. But the pills were really her thing. So she would take things from the medicine cabinet like Percocet, Vicodin, and a lot of downers. She struggled with depression as a result of this. Her parents were physically and emotionally abusing her. She started abusing herself then with these drugs, and she would cut. She struggled with bulimia, and she would hook up with boys that would also abuse her.
Hmm. Well, then there's Teddy, who has a completely different story.
So here's a different picture. Like you said, there's a young man who was raised with what he says was a great family. His parents were really kind to him. They seemed involved. They seemed attentive. His parents repeatedly warned him, you know, they did the right thing. Teddy, just say no to drugs. And he was taught that if you give into this kind of peer pressure that kids will put on you, that somehow you're weak. So he grew up thinking drugs were bad. And he actually looked down at other kids who were doing drugs. He thought he was better than those other kids.
Wow.
And what happened with him is that he began to date a girl who then introduced him to drugs and started asking him to do drugs with her. And Teddy quickly became an addict, and he became hooked on heroin.
Two totally different people, two totally different backgrounds, both on drugs.
Yeah. And so I guess the message from this is that drugs are no respecter of persons. They tempt the rich. They tempt the poor. They tempt the person who's had a great family, right? Who's parented by healthy parents, and then the ones that have dysfunctional parents. Drug use is no longer relegated to back alleys. We have that picture, don't we, in our mind that there's somebody in the back street or the alley that's using drugs, but they're actually found in medicine cabinets, in schools, at workplaces. They're so easily accessible to people today. But here's the point. They always lead to destruction, and they destroy the lives of that person. And a lot of times, Chris, the lives around that person when drugs or addiction is involved.
Well, now that we are awakened to the crisis and the growing problem of addiction, let's come back after the break and learn more about the signs of addiction. Stay with us as we tackle this serious problem that's in our neighborhoods and our churches today on the Dr. Linda Mental Show.
Conflict is a part of every healthy relationship. How you deal with conflict is what will either grow or destroy relationships. Do you avoid? Maybe you become highly emotional and then regret what you said or did. Getting control of our emotions is not always easy, but it is possible. Hi, this is Dr. Linda Mintel, and I wrote the book, We Need to Talk, in order to help all of us deal better with conflict. We Need to Talk, available at bookstores and online where books are sold.
Did you know you have a conflict style? Everybody does. Are you a conflict avoider? Maybe you don't avoid, but instead react intensely. Or perhaps you are a great negotiator. Dr. Linda Mintel offers a free conflict quiz when you visit her website, www.drlindahelps.com. Click on the picture of her latest book, We Need to Talk. Then have a friend or your partner take the quiz too, and see if you can navigate conflict successfully.
Welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. Just a reminder that Dr. Linda has written a number of blogs on the topics of our shows, and you can read them by going to her website, drlindamental.com. She frequently tweets and puts interesting articles on Facebook, and she does add a few fun things on Instagram as well, which I have been a victim of.
You have been the brunt of a lot of our Instagram fun, yeah. But you get lots of likes.
Oh, good. Cool. I need that in my life. Yeah. In fact, you have a picture of yourself and Daryl Strawberry and New York Times bestselling author Donna Van Leer, who also spoke at the parenting conference that you attended.
Do you remember Donna Van Leer? We had her on our show.
I do.
We talked about one of her books, and we talked about child abuse with her as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was a great guest.
We met with her in Nashville, I think, at the NRB.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And she writes those Christmas shoes books.
Right.
And so around the holidays, a lot of people watch her Hallmark films. Mm. They've made a lot of films out of her books.
Right. Well, today on the program, we're talking about addiction and the signs of addiction. And Dr. Linda, what are some of the signs that parents, teachers, and even grandparents should look for to spot drug addiction?
All right. So let's start with a really easy one, which mm-hmm. is smoking. It is a drug. I think sometimes we forget that nicotine is one of the most addicting drugs
wow.
that there is. So if you're looking for kids and you want to stop this early, because mm-hmm. here's the deal with addiction. The best prevention for addiction is to never start.
Right.
So we got to catch kids, especially. It really changes and messes up the teenage brain if we don't get with kids early. Hmm. So smoking, it's really easy. There's a distinct smell in the breath. Obviously, I know kids try to cover it up with mouthwash a lot of times. So
right.
if your kid never uses mouthwash and suddenly they're using a lot of it, it's probably an indication that something's going on. And then a lot of times you'll see cigarettes and lighters mm-hmm. in their possession. And sometimes you'll see cigarette butts outside a window or an area by the garage or some odd place
right.
in the home.
You know, alcohol, signs to look for, beverages missing from the cabinet. If the kid is taking alcohol from your house.
Yeah. So a lot of times, I remember when I was in high school, we'd go over to a friend's house whose parents would have liquor in the cabinets, mm-hmm. and they would take the alcohol out and then they'd fill it with water, water it down so it would look like nobody was drinking it.
Oh, wow.
So we know the tricks.
Yeah. Like you said, with smoking, an excessive use of mouthwash to cover their breath. And hangover symptoms, nausea, vomiting, and headache.
Yeah. So marijuana, which is, we need to do a show on that sometime because mm-hmm. this is the number one drug now that's being abused. But a sweet smell on the clothing or bloodshot eyes. If you see drug paraphernalia around, so there's these pipes and these papers and a lot of things that you can look for, bongs.
Mm-hmm.
Carelessness and grooming, because when you're so mellowed out by pot, you really don't care
wow.
about a lot of things. And then there's an increase in someone's tiredness, their changes in eating and sleeping patterns, those are really important.
Teenagers and young kids have a tendency to abuse inhalants.
I know, it's called huffing
right.
a lot of times.
I find this one to be scary. Red eyes, soaked rags, or empty aerosol cans.
Yeah, because they're using that for the huffing part of it. And
right.
then they have this chemical breath mm. with inhalants because of the chemicals involved. There's also such a thing called club drugs that mm. parents need to know about, like ecstasy. And these are the kinds of drugs that you hear a lot of times with date rape when people are hearing about that. But
right.
one of the signs is that there's a skin rash similar to acne. And then you'll see little bottles of liquid or powder in a teen's room or in their possession.
Mm. With stimulants, you'll see a runny nose, nosebleeds, and then injection marks on their arms and a lack of sleep.
Yeah, and heroin, which is the big one we're hearing a lot about today, very small pupils, a drowsy or relaxed look if there's a recent use, and then, again, you'll find those injecting supplies like needles and syringes. So overall, we've got to pay attention to the changes that we might see in someone we know, whether that's a child or a teenager or an adult, because you'll see changes in eating patterns, sleeping patterns. A lot of times with teens, you'll see academic grades begin to slip. A lot of times teens will isolate themselves, drop out of their regular activities, and you'll see irritability in teens. That's one of the main things that a lot of parents will notice, that suddenly their teen is a lot more irritable.
Well, Dr. Linda, what is the best prevention for drug use?
To never start. or experiment. That would be the best reason. And here's why. The process begins with the recognition of pleasure. So drugs are obviously pleasurable. They hit that pleasure center in the brain. Mm-hmm. But they end with a drive towards compulsion. It's like the person, even though they know this is bad, Chris, they can't stop because all drugs of abuse cause a powerful surge of this neurotransmitter called dopamine, which is just a chemical that registers pleasure. So the likelihood that someone will become addicted has to do with the speed, the intensity, and the reliability of that dopamine release in a person's brain. We just don't know. Some people can take a little bit and suddenly find themselves addicted, and other people, it might take a little bit of time.
What's the difference between a teenager who starts smoking and maybe an adult who starts smoking? Who can break the habit quickest?
The worst is the teenager because it's changing the brain. So right. It literally changes the teenage brain. And then the longer you've done something, the harder it is to kick that habit.
Well, why is it so hard to kick the habit, like you said, and let go of that reward that's felt in the brain?
One of the things that happens is during substance use, there's memory that's laid down in the brain, especially the emotional center of the brain. So over time, the brain begins to adapt. It takes more of a substance than to feel the reward. That's what people call tolerance.
Right.
You have to have more of it to get the same type of reward. And then this compulsion for the substance is felt, and the brain remembers environmental cues to get the drug. That's why simply seeing a needle or going by a place where somebody actually used a drug can actually cue the brain to say, ooh, I want that drug again. Go for that drug. That's when that craving sets in. So undoing this process takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of attention. There are neural pathways in the brain that have been laid down. Those pathways have to be stored. It's like, think of it like a highway. You're laying down lots of highways. You've got to put a blocker on those highways and actually starve them so that the brain begins to then rewire. So this can be done with a lot of support and, more importantly, with the power of the Holy Spirit.
These changes in the brain are still around even after the person has stopped taking drugs.
Yeah, and that's why recovery, it takes time and it involves more than willpower. The brain has to be rewired. It needs to develop those new pathways to operate right. So healing can take place. That's the message. Listen, people, healing can take place and the brain can change. But most often, this takes time and it takes therapy or somebody coming alongside of you, as well as a strong faith. The faith part really helps.
Well, Dr. Linda, I know we have this hope in the Holy Spirit and what he can do in our lives, but teenagers like to take risk. How do those two weigh out?
So adolescence is a time when risk-taking, and especially novelty, you know, kids get they get that dopamine release by doing risky things and new things, which is what novelty is all about. I don't want to say they're drawn to substance abuse because we don't want our kids drawn to it, but they just don't care. They're not thinking, oh, this is bad for me, I got to stop. They consider the risk unimportant, which is why they experiment a lot of the time. So the part of the brain that is responsible for making good decisions is basically not fully online yet. This is why it's so important to direct teens to some healthier risk-taking activities. And that's one of the places, Chris, I think the church could help. You know, those wilderness experiences that a lot of times youth groups will take their kids on, you know, they're scary things on the rope. Those are novel and risky kinds of situations that will get the brain going.
Teens need more structure than we probably give them they've got a lack of impulse control because they're just teenagers.
Right. They aren't many adults walking around in developing bodies. They don't just have the judgment of an adult yet. So this is an excuse for using drugs, but it does explain why they're so vulnerable.
Well, let's get more into the spiritual part when we come back from a break. The good news is that faith makes a difference and was the one thing that transformed Daryl Strawberry into being a different man. Stay with us as we explore how faith makes a difference.
Mother and daughter relationships are powerful, and they impact all our other relationships. Think about it. The way you react with your mom typically is the way you might react with other people. Yet this important bond can be filled with tension when both women try to find their own voice and develop a sense of self. So working through the mother-daughter relationship can be a challenge, but it is so worth the effort. Hi, I'm Dr. Linda Mintel, and I would love to help you navigate this important relationship and strengthen it to the best it can be. That's why I wrote, I Love My Mother, But, a book to strengthen the mother-daughter relationship. We all love our mothers, but sometimes we need a little help working through our differences. I Love My Mother, But, available on my website, drlindamental.com, or online where books are sold. Threats of war, racial tension, divorce, natural disasters. If you are like me, sometimes I just have to turn off the news and remind myself that there is actually good in our world. It's so easy to listen to all the bad news and become worried. Worried about the future, about the Middle East, crime, finances, health, family problems, and, you know, so it goes. But Scripture tells us to take those worried thoughts captive, to be anxious about nothing. That is one of the reasons I wrote Letting Go of Worry. I didn't want worry to grip so many of us and cause us to lose our peace. So the next time you hear bad news, remind yourself to take those anxious thoughts captive. If you need help doing so, Letting Go of Worry is a good resource and will walk you through the steps to living in peace and contentment.
Letting Go of Worry by Dr. Linda Mental, available on her website, drlindamental.com, and online.
This is the Dr. Linda Mental Show, and you can listen to this show anytime on the MyFaithRadio.com page and podcast. And you can send it to your friends as well and stay connected with Dr. Linda on social media so you can keep up with the encouraging blogs and books that Dr. Linda writes. And Dr. Linda, the most powerful part of Daryl Strawberry's story is the transformation he had with a true encounter with Jesus Christ.
You know, he would be the first to say that Jesus brought hope to him, who was hopeless at that time. And in the process of detox, you got to have something to fill that void and that emptiness that led to the addiction in the first place. And that something is a life-changing relationship with Jesus Christ. He heals the internal pain that we all feel. He brings purpose to a life when we're feeling like we don't have any purpose, or a life that has been derailed by addiction. Jesus is truly the most important part of becoming clean and sober.
Wow. And you know, one thing about Daryl Strawberry's testimony is it points to the fact that here he is on top of the world playing Major League Baseball, making great money on TV all the time, and he still became addicted.
Yeah, because he had all this internal pain, and he really wanted people to understand that message, that there's so much brokenness inside of him that you never see on the outside. Right. But he was really, really struggling inside. So here's a story I found on the internet. I love this little story. There's a man named Mr. Meadows who was arrested 37 times and served a total of 10 years in prison. And he says that he eventually got sober through his Christian faith. This is what he said made the difference. "The reason I never give up on people is because God never gave up on me." Wow. "You fall down? I don't care. I'll pick you up. Let's go again," said Mr. Meadows. Mr. Meadows had a revelation of God and his care for him. He experienced being picked up by the people who had the hope of Christ in them. And those people helped him do the needed work of recovery. It is wearing, I want to say, it is wearing on families when you have an addict in the family. But the fact that he knew that God would continue to pick him up was a really big thing. So rather than give up, anyone who's listening or anyone you know who's in the grip of addiction, you need to know that God doesn't give up on you. Let's not wait for somebody to be arrested 37 times or go to prison for 10 years before they see the need for change. Let's help them now to be the people they were created to be. You know, Chris, the church really needs to be a part of this hope and help. I know there's the Celebrate Recovery groups in a lot of churches, but we don't hear a lot in our church, do we, about addiction?
Well, I think that maybe the church still has a picture in their mind that you have to get down and dirty in the alley, like you mentioned earlier, to go rescue people from drug addiction. But it's happening in our house.
I mean, yeah.
It makes me think this. If the medicine cabinet could talk, what would it tell lots of parents of teens that their teens are doing with these drugs in their home?
So I think we need to recognize the incredible need that's out there and the way people are coping with personal pain and they're escaping life through these addictions.
Someone who struggles with addiction, Dr. Linda, simply needs to know that there is help. Psalm 121 says, "I lift my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth."
You and I sang that song in choir. Do you remember?
We did, yeah.
Oh, it's a beautiful, beautiful piece. It was a really chanty piece, but I remember that because we sang it, and music tends to stay with you a lot longer. But it's a powerful verse that our help is always from the Lord. So think about it. That saying, we have help. no matter what.
Right.
And you need to have the help also of a supportive community in order to surrender control to God and do the really hard work of rewiring the brain and living out that life of sobriety and living life in victory. So recovery for most people is just not a straight line, but progressive steps of becoming more like Christ as he empowers you in his Holy Spirit. So people need people, and they need the power of God in their lives as well.
There are people who they are miraculously healed of substance abuse. The cravings are gone, and they are just free immediately.
Yeah, that happens, but I think more of the time it's really a progressive thing. Even in the cases where we hear about miraculous healing, those people have to learn to cope with everyday life and not to go back to medicating their life with drugs when they're feeling pain. They have to be discipled, and all of us need the encouragement to face life difficulties without medicating ourselves. I mean, you and I have to do that every day, right? We have to face the problems without using some way to escape. So most people I know have to do the hard work of surrendering daily to God and work some kind of a program that incorporates body, mind, and spirit.
Might I make a suggestion?
Yes.
You mentioned the word discipling here. That's where the church could get on board.
That's right.
And disciple these people who are trying to break free of addiction.
So you think if there's internal pain and there are problems in their lives and their families, this would be a great way for the church to step in and to do this. Hmm. We want to remember that the addict does need Jesus. We all need Jesus, not just the addict, right? Hmm. But especially to erase those powers of shame that comes with addiction and to be reassured that their inherent worth is in the fact that they are bearing the image of God. They are one of God's children. They can be free, and they can learn to enjoy the way God intended their life to be, free from bondage, which is wonderful once they get there. So in a nutshell here, people need the transforming power of Jesus. They also need wise counselors who understand the addiction process and can support people through the process of recovery. And the church, wake up, be part of that support, as Chris has just said. Be part of that discipling people into their new identity in Christ and having their lives changed for good. Never give up on an addict, as Daryl Strawberry reminds us, because God doesn't give up on us. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Many thanks to our producer, Norm Mintel, our engineer, and my co-host, Chris Weigel, who made this show a conversation. From all of us here at Faith Radio, hey, we'll talk to you next weekend. In the meantime, remember, we're here, we're doing life together, and as we've been pointing out through this whole hour, it's better when you don't have to do it alone. Well, thanks for listening to this conversation from the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and helping us grow the impact of the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player, and you'll never miss a show.